You know, it's always interesting to learn about the latest research being done on sustainable energy at the University of Wisconsin. And today we're going to be talking about some work that's been done to create a renewable energy, a biogas from manure and other food wastes. Biogas systems are great. They can be great because they can you cut energy use, and of course they're very cost effective. And so, talking today with one of the old hands at this, John Greenler. Hi, John.
Hey, Larry.
John's the director of education for both the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute, and it's always great to have you with us.
A pleasure.
You brought a couple of great people with you as well. Which
I think so.
I think so, too. Rebecca Larson, an assistant professor of biological systems engineering at the UW-Madison. Great to have you with us, Rebecca.
Thank you so much. We're excited to be here.
And Aaliyah McCord, who is a PhD candidate in the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies, Environment and Resources Management Program. Have I got that right?
Environment and Resources.
All right. I'm close. Aaliyah, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about. Now, the biogas systems have an opportunity to, or a potential at least, to change a lot of people's lives, don't they, Rebecca?
Yes, certainly. Here in Wisconsin, we have the most agricultural operating digesters out of the U.S., and internationally, we're looking at installing them in places for people to produce all kinds of energy, from heat to energy to cook to electricity, while also reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So you're converting a waste and using it for something positive.
Yeah, and you have a focus on developing countries, if I'm...
Yeah, we do work here in Wisconsin, too, but some of the more recent work where we've been putting a lot of effort has been in Uganda and Bolivia.
And how did, Aaliyah, how did you get involved with this?
Well, it's a kind of a long story, but, you know, we were doing some work on Wisconsin's biogas potential here, and I was in Uganda on another research project, and I sort of was chatting about this technology with my Ugandan friends, and they said, you know what, we really need to do that here. So mm-hmm. we started looking around, and we found this great engineer named Vianney Tumusige, and turns out he's already installing these microscale systems, and it really challenged my assumptions about what biogas is. You know, these are systems that cost anywhere from a couple hundred to maybe $15,000 to install. Very different scale than what we have here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, yeah, we're talking a lot more, aren't we, John?
Orders of magnitude, yes.
I'm sure of that. And this is part of the GLBRC, John?
Wisconsin Energy Institute is the connection here. So
okay.
Yep, because we're looking internationally and different funding sources. But once again, it really connects very closely into the broader framework of renewable and sustainable bioenergy systems. So.
Well, great to have you along and great to talk about this. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. You may have a question about this system. What other types of systems? Have you used something like it? Do you think it's important to find alternative energy sources? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Miller Show Facebook page and you can post your questions or your comments there. And certainly we'd love to hear from you. How do these things work anyway?
It's really pretty ancient technology and there's not a whole lot to it. You can put any organic waste, anything that's organic in nature that can degrade. Microorganisms that are naturally present in manure eat and consume all of the organic waste, and one of their byproducts is producing methane. Mm-hmm. So normally, as waste degrade, that happens anyway. Say at a landfill, throw some food waste in, methane is released. In this case, we're capturing the methane, and then we're using that to either burn or use in a generator or a wide variety of different kinds of technologies.
How do you capture it?
It's all inside of a tank, so it's pretty simple. You put a bunch of waste in a tank. I don't want to use it. And then you just keep the oxygen out, so it's a closed container. Mm-hmm. and up rises the gas, and you collect it right out of the top.
Oh, and then, and how are you, what aspects of this are you doing, Aaliyah, connected with this?
We're kind of looking to see if this technology is delivering on its development promise. So this is a technology that should really have the potential to improve indoor air quality for millions of people worldwide, reduce the burden of fuel wood collection on women and children, improve farmers' yields, you know, improve food security, mitigate climate change, all while delivering a modern standard of public sanitation. And so we're sort of looking to see, is this technology actually delivering on that development promise?
Now, how would it I'm trying to think of how it would increase yields.
Yeah, that high-quality digest state that comes out the other end. I mean, if you think of this as a giant cement tank, like a cement cow, you know, what goes in one end comes out the other.
Okay.
And it's a great source of fertilizer. So people in Uganda don't have access to modern chemical fertilizers. Mm-hmm. This is a cheap alternative for them.
So you can save the gas, and then the leftover goes back on the soil as a fertilizer. How many systems like this are in use? Do we know?
These microscale systems, there's about 30 million worldwide.
Oh, well, that's a pretty good number.
Yeah. Significant implementation. Yep.
But there's probably room for more.
You got it. There's some countries that have found ways to adapt these small-scale systems to their lifestyle and integrate them and have them many neighborhoods with lots of digesters in one neighborhood. Some countries have gone with large-scale systems. But we've seen some in some of the areas that we're working where they really haven't had either the funding to install them or the knowledge of how to integrate them into their systems, or anybody who's been really willing to tackle and look at how they could integrate these systems into their lifestyles.
So that's part of of what you're involved with, Aaliyah.
Yeah, and we've also noticed a lot of end users don't end up using the technology very long. Sadly, probably about 50% of those systems fall out of disuse within a couple of years.
Oh, now why is that?
We think it's the high water demand. We think it's end users don't have the proper education on how to maintain the technology. So we really focus on trying to address some of their concerns, improving the technology itself, as well as giving end users a little more education on how they can properly care for their digester.
Yeah, I would think you'd expect that, if this is working really well, that people would just keep using it.
Well, it's really, I mean, I think there's a lot of integration. I mean, there's there's the science of the fermentation, but then there's the social science as well. You know, how do you integrate it into people's lifestyles, I think, is very critical, and their knowledge.
And I would say the systems require a lot of time and maintenance. So you have to put a lot of labor into operating the systems. You have to know how they work, or else you can get some catastrophic failures that are very difficult to come back from if you're not quite sure how to operate the systems. And then just having people who know what can and can't go in them, how often they need to feed them, how to maintain their temperatures. And really one of the big things we're seeing is how to use the digestate at the end. It's very difficult all the time to manage on a timely basis. The effluent's coming out every day. Maybe you don't need to go to the fields every day, so there's some kind of storage steps that need to take place in between. So there's a lot of planning and management that need to happen to integrate the systems, as well as, you know, not we have to make sure the systems are financially viable. So that means that the end products that we produce are worth the investment up front.
Yeah. And I was just thinking of work that I've done internationally, and I can see where there'd be a heavy communications input to this in within the country, and it would have to be ongoing.
Certainly. This isn't a step in and step out. That's why I think we see a lot of biogas systems that they've tried to implement. For example, in Bolivia, where we're working, a lot of projects there failed because a lot of international communities tried to step in just once and then retreat, and we see the systems fail because they didn't do enough training. So we're really trying to stick around for a number of years to make sure that we've trained the proper people so they can actually use the systems once we're not there.
I've got more questions for you, but Randy in Sauk County is on board here with a question. Randy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. I wonder if your guests had known of the project. Back in the 1970s, when I was out of graduate school, I considered going on an experience with the Peace Corps would have been to Nepal, and I did go through some of the training, and ultimately didn't go, but followed their project. And from about 1974 through about 1980, the deal was to go there and help the communities build these stone that would have been like a dry well, plaster, teach them to plaster them up, and then the only thing that really had to be bought or brought in was like a two or three burner camp stove with a hose and a lid that a lady could take off herself, and she mixed in a relatively small amount of dung and water, and most of the women incredibly mixed that up, just got down in the little tank and mixed it up, and within a few hours they had cooking gas basically for 24 hours, and then they used when it got benign, they used that, which was digested and a very good fertilizer. Now, that was done in Nepal, and I know the Peace Corps was incredibly well received there for those years they built those. All the other women were off walking miles and miles and miles to find wood to burn, and the people that built these, so there was just great demand for the skill. Did you hear of that ever? This was back in the 70s.
Oh, all right. Well, Aaliyah?
Yeah, Randy, I think Nepal has a great reputation for being home to a large number of biogas systems, and I think you did a great job explaining why they're so important and all the many benefits that they can have for communities.
So that's basically what you're talking about.
Exactly.
What you guys are involved
in. Got it. And there's all different kinds of scales. You can do them as simple from a 55-gallon drum. You can build 30 cubic meter systems, which we have in Uganda that are underground. In Bolivia, we just take big rain barrels and turn those into digesters. In Costa Rica, they use a lot of bag systems, so you're just turning a simple plastic bag. So you can use all kinds of vessels, and you can add all kinds of different wastes, and it can be amazingly simple, or you can make it as complicated as you want to as well.
But what Randy's describing is pretty darn simple.
Yeah.
I mean, you still have to, fool around with manure here, let's put it that way, and water and mixing it up a bit. But if you think about that versus walking a few miles to find some proper wood to heat.
And even the idea that a lot of people are already collecting manure in some way, or if they're not, then at least you're also limiting the impact of just leaving the manure or other wastes wherever they may have landed when they were produced. So then you can use them for something that is a little more beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. Randy, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
Appreciate the call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Facebook page titled, The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at some UW research and work on alternative fuel sources, especially for low-income countries, third-world countries, second-world countries that can use this biogas system as a way to create energy for heating and for cooking and a whole bunch of things. And fun to have with us today, John Greenler, who directs education for both the GLBRC and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. John, thanks again.
Glad to be here.
And Rebecca Larson, Assistant Professor of Biosystems Engineering at UW. Rebecca?
Yeah, thanks for having us here today.
And Aaliyah McCourt, PhD candidate in the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies, Environment and Resources Program.
That's right.
I think I got it right that
time. It's a handful.
It's a mouthful, that's for sure. Well, I tell you what, and just to mention, coming up at 11:45, our weather guys are joining us to talk about the unusual weather. We had some spring snowfalls in northern Wisconsin, recent floods in Texas.
Boy.
So, lots to talk about there. In the meantime, though, we're zeroing in on alternative fuel sources and biogas and the work that they're doing in which countries again? Tell me again those countries.
Bolivia and Uganda.
Bolivia and Uganda. And again, join us at 800-642-1234. Jerry in Milwaukee has a question. So let's go there. Hi, Jerry. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for allowing me to participate directly. This is sort of just related. It's not necessarily fuel, but I saw on a public broadcast on TV a couple of years ago, someone that was in an urban setting, I thought it was in the Boston area, and they were using a flushless toilet system. And what it was is it looked like what you would have in an outhouse, you know, I mean,
yep.
all the matter just dropped into some sort of a container, and I think that they routed fresh air from the outside into it or something like that, but the person presenting it said there's no odor, and I guess after a while you gather, you know, what's in there and use it for other uses, possibly as compost. I haven't been able to find any information on that directly on the outside. I was wondering, had you heard of that, and is it something that is viable?
Actually, we're using it in various places in Madison. Mm-hmm. I know the Henry Vila Zoo, for example, has flushless systems, but...
Those can be found in a variety of places. A lot of campgrounds use them. A lot of places out in the woods. I know up in the Apostle Islands, they have some of those up there as well. I mean, they're both taking waste, and they're both biologically degrading it using microorganisms. The difference between these two kinds of systems is with digesters, we're talking anaerobic mm-hmm. systems where we're limiting oxygen. So we're trying to drive certain microorganisms to take over. So we want them to produce methane. In composting, you want oxygen, so mm-hmm. you're trying to encourage aerobic microorganisms to take over. And so they're degrading waste in a different process, which usually has less odor, and you don't get as much methane and other. So in the digester, we really want the methane, so we want to limit oxygen. In composting systems, you want to increase the oxygen because you're really looking for the rapid breakdown that aerobic microorganisms provide.
And handy enough, when you're trying to save the methane, you need a closed system.
You got it.
So
airtight.
Yep. Yep.
It's got to be airtight, so...
But you wouldn't necessarily want a methane building up in your outdoor toilet, so...
They were using this in a home. I mean, is that something that, you know, not just like a campground? Is
sure.
Yeah, sure.
In your home?
Sure.
Yeah,
if you have a place to use the digestate and the fertilizer, you do have to be a little bit careful with human waste and knowing that there's pathogens in that. So composting and digestion are very good at eliminating some of the pathogens in waste. So that's another benefit of these systems.
Yeah.
But you would want to be careful where you use that after you used it from your toilet.
Yeah.
Commercial products out there. I think Clivus Multrum is one company that has, for a long time, has been making units. So, purchase them.
Yeah, you find them on the internet. Yep, they're out there for sure.
Jerry, okay. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for
calling. Yeah, appreciate the call. Let's go to Sherry in Westby next. Hi, Sherry.
Hi there. I just wanted to ask about how these systems can become affordable and able to be distributed in developing countries. I lived in Tanzania about 22 years ago, lived there for a year, and saw, you know, women and kids walking many miles to gather pretty small sticks in order to be able to cook. And then went back about 10 years ago and saw just massive deforestation, you know, because that was their really only source of cooking fuel. And, but, you know, they're all most... rural people are very, very poor, so how that can be economically viable and how it can be distributed in these countries that desperately need something like this.
Oh, it's a good question, Sherry. Thanks for calling. Aaliyah, do you want to take that?
Yeah, thanks, Sherry. I mean, you'll be happy to know that Tanzania is actually one of the leading installers of biogas systems in East Africa. So these things are getting out there, thankfully. But I agree, it's really hard for the rural poor to afford these systems. And in fact, although there's been a push for household-level digesters that would be owned by a single family, I think the promise is really with institutional-level systems, where you're collecting waste from a number of different families, maybe at a school or an orphanage or a government building, and you're having a concentration of waste in one area. Because it is hard for a rural family independently to manage these systems.
And I even think at a household level, We can make much cheaper and simpler versions. You know, we're talking taking plastic sheeting, sealing it on all sides, and feeding it into like an inlet and then having an outlet, something very simple. You're not probably going to get the mass amount of production, but on a family level, you might be able to produce enough for your dinner that night. So on those small scales, you can make them for a very, you know, under $100, something like that. But we're really still seeing that we're using a lot of grant money to get these projects started. And it's really hard for us to try to show that the savings in money is not just the firewood, but trying to take all of these other pieces like the fertilizer and other things to make a package that's financially viable. And I think that's what a lot of our work is focusing on. And that's why a lot of these systems, people want electricity. That's one of the big drivers that they'd like to use the gas for. But that's a very hard sell to make a financially viable system that way. So we're still doing a lot of research to try to improve the end use technologies and see if there's other ways that we can improve the value of a few of the products that are produced from these systems.
I would say some of the other good news is we're seeing 2 to 5 year paybacks on a lot of the systems that are installed in East Africa, which is a really rapid payback. That's great news. And I've also seen some interesting things coming out of Uganda where folks are looking at doing a rotating fund to provide loans to people to purchase these systems to make them a little more affordable.
I think I just wanted to highlight where you started out in terms of that issue of devegetation is really a significant, you know, indirect cost. I mean, it's hard, you know, unless you've actually been there like you have, to fully appreciate that we're not even talking trees frequently. It's really devegetation. It's small little shrubs and just trying to catch any little bit of scrap of biomass to burn. And it's really a significant impact on the environment.
And one of the things I think in Bolivia that we're seeing is a lot of the rural areas are so isolated that all of their energy currently where we're working in Bolivia is run on diesel generators. So the comparison in the cost of running a diesel generator compared to installing a biogas unit, those become financially viable very quickly. So it really is about what that specific region needs, what their access to energy is, and how much that energy may cost, and what other products we can develop from the system.
I can see where a little bit larger system, maybe a community-based system, would be the more viable. Countries I've worked in, $100. I mean, even though that's a small amount of money here, for an individual home, $100 is a lot of money.
And it's a lot to maintain. It's
like
a lot
year's
to maintain
income.
A system.
Yeah, it's a year's income. Yeah. So even though there's payback. So I can definitely see that too. Well, Sherry, you raised some great points. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Sabina in Minnesota up next. Hi, Sabina.
Hi. So I'll try to be as brief as I can because I've been doing a lot of research on this kind of thing. But I was wondering if you guys were aware of the biochar mobile. There's a Kickstarter that was run this last year on it for them to be able to do the research and development necessary for the end product, which would be a fairly reasonable price and would be applicable to rural agricultural systems both in the United States and elsewhere. So that's the first part of it.
Okay. Are you familiar with that?
So if you're talking about, I know a lot of people call biochar can mean a lot of different things. What I know to be biochar is something that you produce from a different mechanism for energy production, say pyrolysis or gasification. And one of the remaining products from that, which are all both thermal conversion, is this biochar, which it's almost like it's really light in weight and it's kind of charcoal, a lot of carbon in it. And we do work with that to look at that. Yes, it's probably a viable option to add to soil, and they've seen improvements when you apply to crops. I know in my research group, we're even looking at applying it to different places in agriculture in Wisconsin because we think that maybe on a smaller scale, it might be more financially viable, and trying to look at ways in which it might reduce runoff or emissions or other things and integrate it into a variety of different places in agriculture. So it's definitely has some promising characteristics, and I know a lot of researchers have been doing a lot of work on it recently. I don't know that we're quite to the implementation phase on that end of it, but some very interesting things going on in that direction.
Yeah, and so I guess in particular I was wondering about the level of this biochar mobile, because I know that, I mean, it, clearly you're familiar with the concept and you probably know about the really low technology, high human input options in a number of countries, as well as the really high input where you have a large facility that material biomass is brought to. But this is a project that's actually a mobile unit that could be taken into a field, biomass could be put in it. The process could be gone through over the course of a couple of days, and then the material could be left in that field for the benefit of that location.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah. Sometimes the transportation of waste is a project killer in so many different places. As I work with waste, that, you know, any moving waste around becomes very costly. So if you can move the system around, I could see that that may have some really great benefits.
Yeah, this is really true across the bioenergy field. You know, when you're dealing with low density energy sources, biomass in general, you have to look very carefully at that transportation piece. If you're moving it around a lot, can just really kind of, when you look at the whole life cycle, energy in versus energy out, can really kind of make or break your project.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sabine.
The folks that are doing this, that was part of the thing that they have incorporated into this Kickstarter that they did, and they're going to try to do it again to finish doing the research and development. But the point is for it also to be a very affordable thing that maybe a co-op community could have, and then it would be used among the different farms and things like that.
And that's great, especially
in the United States or elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's great, especially in regions where the soil quality is very poor.
You know, it's possible Sabina or anybody else, for example, might want to get in touch with you folks as to, I mean, Sabina, in this case, about any work that you're obviously you're doing some work in this area,
yep.
So research in this area. How do we, what's your website, or how do we go online to find out for contacts and so forth?
Sure. I'm on the Biological Systems Engineering website at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. You can reach me at my email, which is ralarson2@wisc.edu. And Aaliyah has the specific Uganda research website. That's waste2energyltd.com. I don't want to mess up.
Oh,
yeah, that's correct.
Have we got that up? Have we got
that? Link on your website.
Oh, Cheyenne Lentz, my on-air producer. Cheyenne, do we have those up on our Facebook page? She says, yes, we do, and I haven't looked myself. So if you want to go to our Facebook page, that might be the simple way to do it. The Larry Mueller Show is the title of the Facebook page. You'll get some contacts there. And, John, you're going to add.
While we're talking about websites, I'll just put a brief plug in for the Wisconsin Energy Institute, and energy.wisc.edu is a really good clearinghouse for kind of all things research on renewable, sustainable energy systems. And we actually have a great page I'll just let folks know about called kind of our Energy Experts. So if you want to find Becky, or others of her ilk, there's really an extensive list of all the, you know, all the research on campus who are, you know, working in this space broadly.
And I'm an extension faculty as well, so there's lots of us extension faculty who are happy to work with people and get questions. And
There you go, Sabina.
You bet. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. I appreciate it. The Energy Institute, I'm sure we have that up on our Facebook page, don't we, Cheyenne? She's looking in. She's saying, no, we're down, but I'll put it up right away.
Thank you, sir.
She's laughing.
Better than reading.
He'll get it put up, and we'll have it there along with the other contacts. So, let's. By the way, we still have open lines. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call, email us at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And let's go to Mike in Hudson next. Mike, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you. Quick comment. Yearn human urine from a healthy human, if mixed 20 to 1, can be a great lawn fertilizer and plant, foliar feeder. And then my question, is urine a positive or negative to that system?
To the biogas system? That's a good question, too.
Well, I would say this, that most of the waste we put in, what we're looking for methane production is carbon. And urine really doesn't have carbon, but it's really high in nitrogen. So that's one of the benefits of why people want to apply it as fertilizers, because it has so much nitrogen, which is really probably the biggest quantity of macronutrient you need in a fertilizer. So it doesn't hurt the system by any means. And, I mean, you can get nitrogen toxicity, but you'd have to add a whole lot of urine to get to a point where the nitrogen's toxic. But it probably doesn't have any direct benefits to the actual methane production, but it would increase the fertilizer value afterwards. Or if you can, and usually it's easier just not to separate it, but if you have a system where it already can be separated, you can treat the two differently and still use the urine as a fertilizer and not put it through the digester if you want to decrease maybe the volume of the system.
So. Yeah.
And that's a little different than those composting toilets that we were talking about earlier. Yeah. Where you would definitely want to divert your urine because having urine really creates an anaerobic condition in your waste.
Oh, under those systems they get separated out.
I believe so.
And the key thing is always maintaining this carbon to nitrogen ratio, right? So one of the things is we need to have the right amount of carbon and the right amount of nitrogen for the nutrients to be biologically active. And so you don't want to have too much carbon or too much nitrogen because it'll offset the system. Now, sometimes we're not in the perfect range, but biological systems, thankfully, are forgiving. And so you can operate in an acceptable range, as we call them, and the systems will still work. But maybe in the biogas systems, maybe it won't produce quite as much gas. Or maybe in the composting system, it'll take a little longer to compost. But generally, they'll operate if you can ensure you're in the right range there.
There we go. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. And another question online. What precautions must you take in producing methane since it is a powerful greenhouse gas?
So you need to be very careful and making sure that you have no leaks in the system, right? What we're doing is we're taking the methane and we're converting it to CO2 through some kind of combustion system. So what we're doing is we're reducing the overall impact by converting that methane molecule to a CO2 molecule, which has less impact overall.
Right, on a relative basis,
right.
It's, I'm trying to remember.
25 times?
Yeah, 23, 25, something like that. So we're really reducing that impact that one carbon molecule has on global warming potential. So you also want to be careful of leaks, though. So if you let methane leak, then you're not converting it at all and you're getting no reduction. One of the other things we have to be careful about is in some places that have a lot of digesters going in where they've supplemented economically the systems, we have to be careful that we're not spending a lot of fossil energy to produce things to go into the digester that might be releasing more greenhouse gases than you're actually saving through the system. So you gotta be careful the choices you make with the systems.
I can relate to that. Are you planning to give any seminars? Somebody else is wondering. Julie in Milwaukee wondered. Are you planning on giving any educational seminars on this for the Midwest Renewable Energy Association? Oh, okay, MREA.
We did once look into producing a series of biogas courses with the MREA, but I don't know that we had enough interest. So maybe if we see enough interest, we might revisit that. I know we do have a biogas course that others at UW that I'm helping out with that's going to be around in November. Every other year, we do the Midwest Manure Summit here in Wisconsin, where we have a lot of speakers about digesters, and we usually do a digester training the day before that. And I give talks regularly, so if you're interested, just reach out to me, and I'll be happy to connect you with all of the information.
You're an extension type, so part of you. I'm an extension type, too, so I know all about that. You end up doing a lot of those kinds of presentations, and when you're in extension, you always kind of enjoy doing it, too. So that's the fun part of it.
And the real thing is if you can find enough people that are interesting and listening, so I'll talk away forever and answer questions if there's enough people who want to hear it.
Well, you're a good talker. There's no doubt about that, Becky. what's your I don't know. Are they? You have some ultimate dreams for this project, and Aaliyah, where are you in your program, your PhD program, and?
Yeah, hopefully winding to a close here within a year.
Okay.
Yeah, but for the goals for Uganda, I'm hoping Aaliyah will stick around for some time. She's been really the one who spearheaded and did most of the work to get this entire project off the ground, and for years she's been working on it, and hopefully we can keep her funded for years and continue to try in Uganda to integrate the digestion application to fertilizer. I think that's a big piece we're working on now. We're working on other health impacts. We're looking at some other issues related to improving the performance of the system. And overall, I think in the end there, we'd like to create a system that's financially viable, that people understand how to use, and we can see a way to implement it. And the companies that we're working with there can survive, and people can afford to put the systems in, and we can find ways to pay for the systems. In Bolivia, it's a little bit different. We're trying to get to a point to produce electricity there. The government there is interested in funding systems if we can get enough people trained to operate them. So I think there we're trying to get to a point to understand what types of digesters would be most effective there, to get a base amount of people trained, to give them something that they can train in and have a future in a career, as well as provide them some available energy resources where they don't have many.
And somebody else asked, what about training? What kind of training would you get for this sort of thing? And I'm thinking, well, there's so many different ways, aren't there, Aaliyah? I mean, you've got Becky here, who's an engineer, biosystems engineer.
Only a part of the story.
Right. Part of the story, and you're doing something not completely different, but related, but just as important in many ways.
Right, and we actually had some great students, undergraduate students here at UW, put together some fantastic training materials for teachers in Uganda that's targeted directly at the end users of those systems. And they, you know, those are easy to understand, you know, based on pictures that sort of explain what can and can't go in the digester, how often you feed it, how you handle the waste. I think creating these educational materials is really important to ensure that people understand how to use that technology.
So life sciences communication, where it was my home department, is another good area, as well as obviously the Nelson Institute's been, you're a part of that. And I want to just go, just as we conclude here, once again, the websites, where do we, you know, if people want to get a hold of you, Becky, for example, where do they go?
Biological Systems Engineering at the University of Wisconsin-Madison website. You can find the department there, and you can find my name under there and all my contact information. And then I think up on the Facebook page here, they have Aaliyah's website, or we'll get it up there shortly. So you can see the great website she and some other students have put together about all the research in Uganda and some of the efforts that we have going on there.
It's really well done.
Yeah. It's a beautiful site that they worked really hard on. So,
well, it's great to talk with you about it. I see an email from John said, hey, just wanted to share that capturing organic residues helps reduce landfill waste back here in this country as well, to the tune of millions of tons of food waste, for example.
We have different hurdles to overcome here in Wisconsin, mostly on the financial side, and that comes with engineering tasks that we need to work on to reduce costs for, and we're always working on those too here in Wisconsin and around the U.S. Let's hope we remain the leader in Wisconsin in biogas installations. I know we have a lot of people around the state who work really hard and are always pushing the technology and working and advancing it all the time, so...
Well, hopefully we can get you back and talk some more about this. It was great fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. John Greenler directs education for both the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. Becky Larson, assistant professor of biosystems engineering at UW-Madison. Aaliyah McCord, PhD candidate in the Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Great to have them with us. And yeah, you know what? We'll pick this up again. I've done a lot of international work over the years, and I've always found it very rewarding and always plenty of problems and issues, but it's nice that we have good people like this working on solving those kinds of issues. You know, it's always good to have experts in a lot of areas, and here at the UW, we've got them in everything, including weather. And you know what? We got our weather guys coming up next to talk climate and weather here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us.